Well, how did you first come to be a panelist on My Word?
Well, I'm afraid it's a rather sad story, because my predecessor, Nancy Spain, who was a journalist and writer, and a very good one too, was killed in a plane accident. And they were right in the middle of a series and fairly desperate. And I think it's just Dillis, so they were all saying, who on earth can we get, who on earth can we get? And I'd known Dillis a very long time. We've been sort of since childhood, or my girlhood anyway. And she suggested it, and they gave me a trial and took me on.
What was the trial like?
Well, the awful thing was, you see, I'd never seen My Word or heard it, because at that time I was working so hard myself. I didn't listen very much to radio, and also watched television very little. So I had to pretend I sort of knew more about what I was supposed to be doing than I did in fact know. But the producer at that time and the anchorman and all, they were so good and so kind and helpful that you couldn't be scared.
So you were on that then for a long time?
Well, I think it was 13 years, mm-hmm. something like that. And then I had to leave for purely personal reasons. I was very sad to leave because I loved it. It was one of the few jobs in which there really was nothing but pleasure.
Did you ever have to do any homework for it?
Absolutely none. I must say at this point, it used to infuriate me. But people would say, of course you know the answers in advance. But honestly, quite sensible people really believed it. Well, how you could be asked in the quiz show the meaning of a word, or how to place a word in literature, and just trot out the answer as though having known it before, I can't imagine with any spirit at all.
Did you ever, were you ever jealous of the fact that Frank and Dennis got to do those wonderful stories at the end? Did you ever want to do that?
Oh, no, I couldn't have begun to do it. No, that's unique to them.
Now, what was the work that you were doing at the time?
At the time, I was doing a page on the Sunday Express, which I'd like to stress was an absolutely first-class paper then. It was a broadsheet, not a tabloid, and quite different from what it is now. And it was very demanding work, because a page is not more than a column, really. And I had to find pictures, too. I had a tiny staff to help me, and I loved that, too. But it was very demanding.
What was the subject, or was it very general?
Well, it started being as on fashion and women's subjects. And then I protested and said I must take some different job or some other place in the paper. And then gradually I was allowed to move over more and more to general affairs. But I left eventually because I wanted to write all for women's journalism, and I went to write a current affairs column for the Daily Mail.
How did you get your start in journalism?
Oh, yes, of course, I remember now. I answered an advertisement in the Times. That sounds sort of familiar way of starting a career. On Vogue, where I was for no less than 7 years, was my first job, which is why I knew it was always sort of grabbed to write about fashion. But I learned a lot of En Vogue about sub-editing, and it was very professional in the way it was produced. And I think when you really can sub-edit, you can really do a lot in journalism.
Is that what you always wanted to do?
I don't think so. I don't think I knew what I wanted to do, but it was a deep depression at the time in the early 30s, and not at all easy to get a job at all. So I think I grabbed the chance of a good job as soon as I could get it.
And you found that you liked doing journalism?
Oh, I loved it. I adored it. I'm so sorry now that people just do it to make the money and can't wait to get home.
It's changed a lot, hasn't it?
Oh, it's changed very much.
People, they can write from their homes and don't even have to go into the office.
I think it changed partly when Fleet Street itself changed physically, and all the big newspapers disappeared to outer London. And somehow, but then you see everything has changed as far as work goes. People used to like being a banker or an accountant or working in the city. Well, now they have to get up at 5 o'clock and they don't get home till 10. And I don't think they can't wait to retire. And I used to think the most awful thing would be when the day came and I had to retire.
During the years that you were doing My Word, was this, I guess it was done in spurts, that is, it wasn't a continuous year-round thing.
No, we did it in 13, I think it was 13 or 14, varied, per year, which we would do in a series so that we would all be in London at the same time.
And this was done, of course, with an audience.
That's right.
Always in the same theatre?
It was for a long time in a very pretty little old Victorian theatre called the Playhouse. Then I think we, for some reason, we lost the lease of that, and it was done in various different places. But that was the nicest, the most fun.
So it was, I guess, almost like being on stage, being a performer.
Oh, yes, because you've got it was a proper little theatre with proper little boxes and red theatre curtain and everything.
What were some of the fondest memories of doing those programmes?
Oh, I think if I made a success, if I got, say, 3 questions and I got the answers right and got a lot of laughs, that would be my fondest memory. And if I fluffed it or was a bit flat that night, you don't feel it quite so good at the end.
I know, and I think sometimes when one first listens to a program, a quiz program like that, that one thinks that the point of a program is, of course, who wins and who loses, but that, of course, that wasn't the point of the program at all.
No. When I first started, I took it seriously and tried desperately hard to get the answers right. And I think it was Frank, actually, who took me aside quietly one day and said, look, dear, don't try so hard. It doesn't matter who wins or who loses. It's just 4 people having a good time talking about words. But this doesn't mean that Frank and Dennis weren't extremely jealous of each other over the stories. And if one of them had a long run of winning, say 3 weeks or 4 weeks on end, the other would be extremely miffed.
Do you ever listen to those shows today?
No. It's always, you can't hear, you see. They're quite finished in England. But they are replayed in Canada, I know, because I have Canadian friends who say they still hear it. And you tell me that in the States,
oh yes,
it's a rerun. And lots, I don't get any repeat fees anymore. I seem to have run out of them.
Did you ever listen to My Music when it was on?
Oh, yes, I loved that too. I loved that. I admired their extraordinary knowledge in so many different directions.
Well, now I just discovered before making this trip over here that you have another career as a writer about gardens.
Yes, that came much... came much later for me than my life in Fleet Street. But I'd always gardened from a child and loved gardens and knew a little bit about it as an amateur. Well, I'm still an amateur. But then I wrote a book before the sort of great wave of gardening books. I was lucky or I timed it well, came out, called Down to Earth. And it was a remarkable success. And then I started really going to see gardens. I've seen a lot of gardens now. And studying the subject, learning the proper names and of flowers and of plants, and improving my knowledge a bit. And then I had pure stroke of luck. I was asked by the publishers for Vita Sackville West and Harold Nicholson if I would like to do, and nobody had done it, this was the first one, official story of the making of the famous Garden of Sissinghurst. Well, that just dropped into my lap, you know, like a sort of diamond dropping out of the sky. So I said, yes, please. And after that, it was easy going. But I've not written a lot of gardening books compared with many of the gardening writers today, because I will not repeat myself. I think when you've done one subject and said all you feel you know or can offer on the subject, you should do something quite new or shut up.
Well, I've just seen this delightful book of letters to your daughter about gardening.
Well, that was very much done con amore. We had the gardens next door. I never thought she was going to be keen, but suddenly she suddenly went mad about it. I haven't, alas, got my little cottage and garden anymore, but hers next door she has still got. And she'll goes down there every weekend, rain or snow or hail, and work and adores it and works in it. She's more of a fanatic than I was.
But the letters are delightful. I mean, these are actual letters that you had written to her, even though you lived next door.
Well, what I did was I thought I would like to write about my relations with her and our two gardens and give her as much information as I could in a maternal sort of way. And I did it over a year, always writing at the time. I didn't write it all in one consecutive go. Every week I wrote the letters so that they were at least genuinely of the moment. I suppose that's my journalistic instinct, really, is to be of the moment. So I think any freshness they have is because they were probably written when I was sitting in the garden, and they were written about the month I was writing about something that happens in May. I was sitting in May writing the letters.
So you've given up that cottage now?
Alas, I had to. It became too much for me, and I have a flat in London. And I'm very, very old, so I couldn't spend my whole life on seeming to be running between the two on the motorway. And so I had to sell it. It was very sad. But anyhow, no one person should have two homes all on their own, I think.
So today, do you have other journalistic plans?
Oh, no. I'm 87 at that point, I would like to point out. And yet I am so involved. I read three newspapers a day on The Spectator, and I'm absolutely gripped. And people are always amazed how up I still am, relatively, in current affairs. I adore newspapers. And when I wake in the morning, I'm furious that the newspaper man is late. I want to murder him.
Well, I appreciate your hospitality and inviting me here to do this interview. It's been a real pleasure to meet you.
Well, it's been lovely seeing you and to hear that my long-lost effort and my word is still liked in America.
It won't die because a few years ago, the radio station in Chicago that actually does the syndication in the States let us know that, oh, well, we're going to stop syndicating My Word and My Music, and we're going to replace it with something. And there was such an uproar, they had to abandon all plans to replace it, and it's been still running ever since.
It isn't. I can't believe it. Well, I'm so gratified, and I must say I've had charming letters from people in America over the years. A lot of them thinking that it's still being done, I think. They're not quite clear that it's a rerun.
Yes, I got a letter just last week from a listener who had visited England and went to the BBC and was quite surprised to learn that it was no longer being produced. And at least must be around 500 shows in each of those My Word and My Music. We run them both back to back, and so they'll be running for a long time.
Were they both equally popular in America?
I think My Word probably was more popular than My Music. We knew about that first.
One layer of level of knowledge less, isn't there, really? It's not quite so
right.
Quite so complicated.
Well, once again, thank you for your...
Well, thank you very much for coming to see me, and I'm so gratified that the program still goes on.
Thank you.